This is Naima Novetsky from AllahTorah.org. Today's Torah cast will explore the story of the sin of the golden calf, focusing on two main questions. First, what was the nature of the people's sin? Where did they go wrong? And second, how are we to understand Aharon's role in the incident? The story opens by recounting that when the nation saw that Moshe was late in coming down the mountain, they requested of Aharon, "Aseh lanu Elohim asher yelechu lefanenu," make for us a God who will go before us. Ostensibly, then, Moshe's tardiness is what prompts the sin. What, though, is the connection between Moshe's absence and the nation's request? Is the calf born out of an existential angst in which the people are searching to fill the theological void left by Moshe's disappearance? Or is it merely the product of a practical need for visible leadership to help them navigate and survive the travails of the wilderness? As such, does the term Elohim, which the nation uses here, have a sacred or a secular connotation? Does it mean God or leader? Either way, how would a molten calf provide the solution to their problems? In face of the nation's request, we might expect to hear some protest and rebuke from Aharon, but instead, he appears to simply acquiesce and even takes the lead in gathering gold and molding it into a calf. The idea that the Israelites would seek to shift their allegiance to an idol so soon after Hashem's miracles and revelation in Egypt and Sinai is deeply troubling, but considering the immaturity of the nation and its rebellious nature, perhaps not so surprising. How, though, can we understand Aharon's participation? Is it possible that Aharon was actually involved in an idolatrous rite? Or is it blasphemous to even consider such a possibility? Moreover, how could it be that only shortly thereafter Aharon was consecrated as the high priest? Should not his actions have compromised this appointment? Several other questions relate to these issues as well. Throughout this story, the people refer to the calf as an Elohim. Yet, when Aharon builds the altar, he announces Chag LaHashem Machar, that there will be a feast for Hashem tomorrow. Is there any significance to this difference? Is Aharon using the proper name of Hashem to refer to the calf or to Hashem himself? Second, the fashioning of the calf is followed by the proclamation, "This is your God who took you out of Egypt." Is it possible that the nation could really believe that this newly formed molten calf had actually been responsible for the Exodus? Third, why did Aharon decide to mold specifically a calf? Was this an arbitrary or an intentional decision? Two final questions relate to Moshe's actions upon descending the mountain. His first reaction upon seeing the calf is to smash the tablets. But how can Moshe destroy Hashem's own handiwork? Is this action simply a manifestation of fury, or does it have some symbolic significance? Afterwards, Moshe burns the calf, spreads the ashes in water, and gives of this mixture to the nation to drink. What is the purpose of this deed? Is it meant as a punishment, a test, or an educational tool? In attempting to answer these questions and properly understand the sin of the golden calf, exegetes find themselves in a quandary as they attempt to define a sin which was egregious enough to merit the nation's near destruction, while still explaining how the nation, and especially Aharon, could blunder so greatly so soon after the revelation at Mount Sinai. We will explore three understandings of the sin, each of which tries to strike a different balance between these competing factors. A first approach, taken by many commentators, makes no attempt to mitigate the blame of the people, but struggles valiantly to defend Aharon. It assumes that when the people request "Aseh lanu Elohim," they are referring to fashioning an alternative deity. Thus, in making and worshiping the calf, the people betrayed Hashem, transgressing the cardinal commandment, "You shall have no other gods before me." According to the 13th century commentator, Rabbi Avraham ben Harambam, the Israelites believed that only someone as perfect as Moshe could access Hashem, and that without him, they did not have the power to do so. As such, when they assumed that Moshe was not coming back, they decided to return to the idolatry they had known in Egypt. Alternatively, it's possible that the nation had actually perceived Moshe himself as a god, thinking that all the miracles he performed stemmed from his own powers. Thus, when they believed that he was not returning, they recreated a new god to take his place. Rabbi Avram ben Harambam suggests that the people might have asked specifically for a calf, thinking that it was under the influence of this astrological sign that they left Egypt. Thus, they refer to it as the God who took you out of Egypt. When Moshe descends the mountain and sees the people prostrated before the calf and sacrificing to it, his first response is to destroy the tablets. If the people were really viewing the calf as a god, this makes sense. The people had committed theological adultery and proven themselves unfaithful. And thus, Moshe rips up their marriage contract, the tablets. As it was not clear which members of the nation had actively worshipped the calf, Moshe gives them to drink water mixed with the calf's ashes in a test similar to that used to test a sotah, a suspected adulteress. These waters marked, or perhaps even caused the guilty to become ill and die. One might also posit that in destroying the calf and having the people actually consume its ashes, Moshe highlighted how powerless and unworthy of worship it really was. There is thus much to support the idea that the people were truly guilty of worship of foreign gods. Such a reading, though, makes Aaron's actions extremely troubling. Is it conceivable that he really encouraged such idolatry? Rashi maintains that actually all of Aaron's actions were aimed at delaying the people, hoping that Moshe would arrive before they sinned. Thus, Aaron asked specifically the women for their jewelry, assuming that they would be reluctant to agree. He also proclaims Chag Hashem, but only Machar, tomorrow, pushing off the feast until the next day. In fact, Aaron here uses the proper name Hashem, referring to God himself, because he was certain that by the morrow, Moshe would return, and the people would once again revert to serving Hashem. Notwithstanding all of these points, however, one might still question why Aaron did not simply refuse to make the calf, given the capital nature of the crime. Rav Sadia Gaon thus goes further in his defense. He compares Aaron to Yehu, one of the Israelite kings, who explicitly pretended to promote idolatry only in order to discover and eliminate those Israelites who were guilty of Baal worship. Here too, Rav Sadia suggests, Aaron acquiesced to the nation's request only to expose the idol worshippers among the nation. Rav Sadia's full-throated defense of Aaron's actions may be partially motivated by an attempt to counter Muslim claims that passages in the Torah which portray sins of prophets are forged insertions. His defense, though, is not without its difficulties. For if this really was Aaron's intent, one would have expected the Torah to say so, and Aaron himself should have explained as much to Moshe when asked about his deeds. The Torah, though, states explicitly that Hashem was very angry at Aaron. It is perhaps the difficulties inherent in this defense of Aaron which leads others to a different understanding of the sin. The 12th century Spanish poet and philosopher, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, attempts to minimize both Aaron and the people's sin, portraying them as having positive, albeit misguided, intentions. According to him, the nation had no idolatrous intentions, but rather only desired a tangible object which could represent Hashem and serve as a focal point for their worship. They erred only in not recognizing that all graven images are prohibited, even of Hashem himself. As such, they did not transgress the prohibition against worship of foreign gods, only the prohibition, you shall not make a graven image. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi explains that when Moshe ascended the mountain, he was supposed to return with the tablet and ark, which would serve as concrete objects to which the nation could direct their service of God. However, when 40 days passed, the people feared that Moshe would never return, and thus they requested Aseh Lanu Elohim, deciding that they must create their own physical symbol of Hashem. It's not clear why they chose a calf rather than any other symbol. It's possible that since throughout the ancient Near East, deities were often depicted as standing on pedestals of beasts, usually a bull or lion, Aaron might have similarly imitated the standard artistic convention, with the important difference of not adding any image of Hashem himself atop the pedestal. As to the question of how the people could sin so soon after the revelation at Sinai, according to this position, it's possible that actually that experience itself might have contributed to the sin. Having heard Hashem's voice at Sinai, the people were not satisfied to just pray to a faceless deity. They longed for a continued connection and a more tangible expression of Hashem's presence. As such, throughout the episode of the golden calf, the people never intended to forsake Hashem. To the contrary, they were hoping the calf would help them to worship him. They say Chag Hashem Machar because they truly intend to worship Hashem, not an idol. This reading, though, raises a question. If the people were acting out of loyalty to God, why did Hashem desire to annihilate them? This leads some proponents of this position to suggest that despite their positive intentions, a portion of the nation did end up worshiping the calf itself. If so, it is understandable why Hashem is angry at Aaron, but nonetheless forgives him. Aaron himself never worshiped the calf, and he never intended to. But since his actions led the nation astray, he too is a target of Hashem's wrath. This might further explain what led Moshe to destroy the tablets upon descending the mountain. Moshe perhaps realized that before bringing another concrete symbol of Hashem's presence to the people, he needed to first make sure that they recognized that the tablets were just a symbol and not worthy of worship in and of themselves. Destroying the tablets was thus a lesson to the people, dispelling any notion that physical representations had any innate powers. This position thus manages to present a fairly balanced picture of the nation's wrongdoing. They sin and err, but not maliciously. Thus, Hashem is angry, but also forgiving. Nonetheless, not all are satisfied with this balancing act, and some look to exonerate the people to an even greater degree. The 12th century French Tosafist, Rav Yosef Bechoshur, is perhaps the commentator who goes the furthest in his defense of both the nation and Aharon. He divorces the people's actions from any form of idolatry or disloyalty to Hashem, as he portrays them as asking to replace not Hashem, but only the missing Moshe. According to Rav Yosef Bechoshur, when Moshe tarried in descending from the mountain, the people searched for an alternative guide for them in the wilderness. When they say, Aseh lenu Elohim, they are asking not for a god, but for a new Ish Elohim, a spiritual leader who will lead them both spiritually and physically through the wilderness. The word Elohim carries its secular connotation of judge or leader. It was Aaron, not the people, who decided to create an object rather than appointing a person. He feared that had he chosen a human leader, the people would be quick to switch their allegiance, leading to faction and even civil war when Moshe returned. However, if he made a golden form without any powers, they would abandon it as soon as Moshe returned and readily re-embrace Moshe. When Aaron announces Chag LaHashem Machar, he means that on the next day, the nation would celebrate the inauguration of their new leader and have a feast to thank Hashem for it. He suggests that the next day's feasting and sacrifices were indeed intended for Hashem's honor, a natural part of any inaugural ceremony. He compares it to the celebration of Shaul's coronation, which was similarly accompanied by sacrifices and happiness. When Moshe returns to view the celebration, he destroys the calf not because it was an idol, but because it was now wholly unnecessary. Rav Yosef Bechoshur suggests that Moshe did not actively give the ashes to the nation to drink. He simply sprinkled the calf's remains in the water to dispose of them. But since this was the nation's water source while in Sinai, they ended up drinking it. It's not clear, though, why the text would emphasize this point if it was just incidental. This approach, then, manages to absolve the nation and Aaron of almost all guilt, as Aaron was simply trying to placate the people by providing a powerless leader whom they would abandon as soon as Moshe returned. He does not sin at all. This makes his appointment as priest very understandable. But the strength of this position is also its weakness. If neither the nation nor Aharon sinned, why is Hashem so angry at both? Why did Moshe need to break the tablets if the people had not broken the covenant? Rav Yosef Bechoshur replies that Hashem's actions were aimed at avenging Moshe's honor, not his own. Nonetheless, we question, did the nation really deserve to be wiped out for merely looking to replace Moshe? Considering that they thought he was likely not to return, it's hard to say that they were prompted by rebellious thoughts. So what is motivating Rav Yosef Bechoshur to go to such extremes in his mitigating of the sin? Throughout his comments to the chapter, Rav Yosef Bechoshur speaks of the heretics who mock Israel for failing and sinning with the calf, alluding to Christian claims that this national original sin led to a breaking of Hashem's covenant with Israel and necessitated the system of commandments as a corrective. As such, it's very likely that his reading of the story, which absolves the people of any sin against God, is motivated by a polemical desire to refute these claims. In summary, the sin of the golden calf has been understood in numerous ways. as an attempt to replace Hashem, an attempt to replace Moshe, or as a misguided and incorrect mode of worshiping Hashem himself. It's also possible that different members of the nation viewed the calf in different ways, and that really all three approaches can coexist. What are the pros and cons of each position? And what can we learn from the nation's mistakes for our own service of Hashem? Though we might no longer have an inclination towards idolatry, in what ways do we find substitutes for Hashem, similarly forgetting him? When do we put our own modes of worship before his mandated ones? For more on this topic and other topics related to Parashat Ki Tisa, please visit alatorah.org.